Case is 99-2158, in the matter of the adoption of Justin Richard Crescenti.
Just another adoption case.
You may begin.
I know that the... I remember reading clips about the Youngstown paper writing about it. That's all I know.
The youngest organizations of grassroots citizens for children, the National Task Force for Children's Constitutional Rights, and the National Committee for the Rights of the Child. As amicus, we attempt to put a voice to the thousands of clapping hands. Hands clapping for justice for children. Children like Justin Crescenti. Grassroots Citizens briefly is a nonprofit organization formed in 1999 that advocates for the recognition of all children as rights-bearing citizens entitled to safe permanent families. The National Task Force for Children's Constitutional Rights was founded in 1998 by the Honorable Charles Peel, Judge of the Connecticut Superior Court.
Mr. Conroy, I might suggest that you have 15 minutes to argue. We read your brief, and we know about the organization. You might want to get on with the substance of the argument.
In my presentation today, I shall attempt to demonstrate to the justice of this court why the Honorable Court should reverse the decision of the Court of Appeals and hold that jurisdiction of this case should be in the state of Ohio.
Do we look at this conflicts of law issue the same as we do any other, determining who has the greater contact? More contacts are in Ohio or are they in Kentucky?
Yes, we do. In fact, we look at the significant contact theory, and in one of my argument points, under the provisions of the Interstate Compact for the Placement of Children, jurisdiction to determine issues regarding the revocation of consents in adoption proceedings best in the receiving states, here, Ohio, and other jurisdictional provisions of the Interstate Compact are superseded by the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction Act and the Parental Kidnapping Prevention Act. Here, Ohio and the state of Kentucky, which has the companion case, have adopted the Interstate Compact under Ohio Revised Code 5103.20. And again, the purpose of that act is to promote appropriate jurisdictional arrangements for the care of children. Here, going over the Ohio case, the birth parent selected an Ohio couple to adopt their child, and then we go through the general procedures that happens in Ohio here. We had signed consents in January of 1998 the consents indicated that they were irrevocable. There was also an interstate compact placement of children document where the sending agency, in this case the birth parents, the form is filled out and approved by the Kentucky Cabinet of Children and Families, and then, the Interstate Compact office there, and then it goes to Ohio, and it's also approved there. And then
during all of those proceedings,
yes.
At what point do you contend that Ohio was accorded jurisdiction? At what point in all of the signing of these papers, the second set, and then finally the issue of withdrawal. At what point in this whole procedure did a jurisdiction in Ohio ever attach?
From my limited experience as amicus on this case, I believe that after the papers were signed, the jurisdiction then vested in Ohio upon the approval of the Ohio Interstate Compact Office, and then the child on February 17th of 1998, of course, went to Ohio.
Now, what section of the act do you rely on to support that position?
It's under 5103.20, I believe. So then, as a result of the interstate compact placement in Ohio, then Justin began to reside in Ohio, and that's when all of his connections to the state of Ohio began. He was residing with his adoptive parents, Rich and Cheryl Crescenti. He basically began to get involved in activities in Ohio with his extended family. He also began to get involved in activities in the normal course of being a child and having parents that want you to enjoy your life, and he did.
Counsel, fundamental to any adoption is a valid consent. In this case, there is a dispute about the status of that.
Well, let me backtrack here so briefly. The consent was signed on, get the correct date here. The consent was signed on January 27th of 1998. That's when Regina Moore and Mr. Doherty signed their consents, and at that time, 20 days later, they were considered to be irrevocable. So that was the point in time when...
Considered by whom?
I believe both courts would consider them to be irrevocable.
Isn't that a decision for the Kentucky court to make? Isn't that precisely one of the issues that's still pending in Kentucky?
Well, I think in the Kentucky actions that were involved, there was first a Kentucky voluntary termination of parental rights action that the Kentucky Cabinet for Children and Families testified that it was unnecessary. The birth parents in the state of Kentucky were parties to that action, but the Assentes and Justin Assente were not parties. At that point in time, the Kentucky court wouldn't let them testify, and that was sort of a denial of their due process rights. Then the next action that was filed 6 months later was immediate.
Could you back up? That was sort of a denial of the due process rights.
Well, it was a denial of their due process rights because the Assentes and Justin Assente were not made parties to the action, and then the court wouldn't let them testify about the adoption proceedings.
This is in Kentucky.
Correct. Then there was a second action that was filed around August 18th or August 17th of 2000, 6 months later. And at that time, there was already, that action, immediate entitlement action, was filed in Kentucky, but there was already a pending Ohio adoption action that was on appeal. And the judge in that Kentucky case utilized the findings of this first Kentucky case in ruling for the second Kentucky case, which again resulted in a lack of due process notice and opportunity to be heard, because the Assentes again were not allowed to participate, or their counsel was not allowed to participate in that hearing.
So how do we get from a, at what point does, is Jewish, at what point do we have a valid consent? How do we get that?
Well, the consent procedure in Ohio is that you sign a consent for adoption, in front of a judge. But in Kentucky, and fortunately being just in Vegas, I'm not totally sure about this, but they signed their consents.
Well, isn't that fundamental?
January 27th.
I mean, wait a minute. You say you're not totally sure about it. Isn't that fundamental to this case, a valid consent?
Yes. And they did sign one on January 27th, 1998, and their attorney explained that consent to them. And then they signed it, and then the consent was irrevocable.
But it's alleged that the attorney said you can revoke this consent at any time up to the final adoption hearing.
Well, it's alleged that, but we believe that the consent was properly signed and executed, and that they knew that they were signing such a consent.
And they had gone through this procedure before.
The additional side view of this is that their first child is actually Justin's biological brother. His name is Joseph, and they had gone through the same proceeding to give their first child, Joseph, up for adoption to the Assente family. And as a result of that, they had been through the proceedings, they understood how the adoption proceeding worked. And then the second situation came up where they, again, contacted the Assentes about adopting Justin.
Now, the Ohio court can never look behind that consent form. They accept it. The Ohio court will accept that consent form face value as being valid.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
So that issue can never be resolved by the Ohio court.
Was the lawyer who gave...
Don't we have a Kentucky court right now on record that says that consent is not valid?
Yes, I believe in, and I understand that there's an appeal to the Kentucky decision.
So how can Ohio go forward on a consent that another court has declared invalid? What gives the Ohio court authority to say, well, we don't care what you think, this paper looks good to us, we don't take any evidence, we don't talk to the people, we don't talk to attorneys, we just don't agree with you, and we're going to go forward with the adoption, but getting them a Kentucky court saying it's invalid.
The trial court held that the Kentucky decision was not going to be given full faith and credit because of the lack of due process that was given to the Acentes in terms of the first...
So they didn't give the biological mother due process in Ohio then?
They didn't give the adoptive parents any due process in...
So in making that decision, what happened to the due process rights of the parents in Ohio?
Well, I believe that in terms of the adoption petition that was filed here in June of 1998, that they were notified. The birth parents were given proper notice and an opportunity to be heard, and I know that their counsel was here today.
What did they do? Did they appear? Did they argue? Did they object? Have they already decided this issue?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what happened in terms of the adoption petition.
Well, counsel, I'm a little troubled. This is a case that's made it all the way to the Supreme Court, and you're here to argue it, and you keep telling us you're not sure what happened.
Well,
how are we to get our arms around this and make a proper decision when...
I'll attempt to continue with my argument. Basically, an Ohio adoption proceeding constitutes a custody determination under both provisions of the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction Act and Parental Kidnapping Prevention Act. Here, Kentucky and Ohio have adopted the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction Act and the Parental Kidnapping Act, and should Ohio should apply these two acts to this proceeding.
Let me ask, we keep interrupting, but that's our style here. A parental proceeding, as you know, is defined in the Uniform Act. Why is one of the issues that seems to be in contest, and the Court of Appeals has one view of it? Why is the very first proceeding where the natural parents decided to terminate their consent? Why is that not a parental proceeding? And that, if it is, and doesn't that take precedence over? I mean, that's sort of the first time at which a court takes jurisdiction of some matter, or is it not, if it fits within the definition of jurisdiction? It was in March, I think, March of 1998. We had the second proceeding in August of...
Right, March of 1998, there was a petition for voluntary termination of parental rights.
Yeah, now why does that not give the Kentucky court jurisdiction to the exclusion of the Ohio court? That's a determination. A court has to determine whether the parents are going to, the natural parents are going to give up their, or withdraw essentially their consent. Doesn't that determine parental rights, or at least it's a step in it, isn't it?
It is a step in it, but this was one of the procedures where the Kentucky cabinet first testified that the procedure was unnecessary. And that though the birth parents and the state were parties, the Acentes and the child were not parties to this action. So there was the due process aspect of the fact that
Am I incorrect? Didn't the Acentes come and make an appearance and say, we're appearing only to contest jurisdiction?
They did that.
They could have done more, could they not have, or do we know?
At that time, it was my understanding the court would not let them testify, and that's really where the lack of due process commenced.
In fact, even though the court had served them to be there, they were informed that they were not parties to the action and had no rights or authority there, didn't they? You keep arguing the UCCJA. Can you find any place where this court has ever applied Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction Act, or for that matter, the Parental Kidnapping Prevention Act, to an adoption proceeding in Ohio?
Not in this court, Your Honor. However,
not from this court, okay. Now, we have some in the Court of Appeals.
Correct.
Is there a split on the Court of Appeals in that authority?
I believe that there is. I referenced in my notes for the argument a case from the Gallia County Court of Appeals of the Ross County Court of Appeals.
Yeah, there's one, Ross County Court of Appeals. Now, if we hold that neither of those applies, does that end the Ascenti's case? I mean, what else do they attach to claim Ohio jurisdiction for adoption of a, quote, foreign child?
I don't know the answer to your first question, but I would say that their connections with the state of Ohio would lead to jurisdiction and the fact that there's a petition filed in the state of Ohio for adoption.
Okay, let me move to something that you may know more about, because I think it's important for my determination, and I would probably ask the other side at the appropriate time. My understanding is when the natural parents went to court in Kentucky, they withdrew their consents. Now, if they withdraw their consent, is there a case pending in Kentucky? There's no case for custody if the consent issue has been withdrawn. So I guess my question is there a viable case even in Kentucky for purposes?
There is a case pending at the Court of Appeals level in Kentucky.
On what issue?
I believe on the immediate entitlement action.
Was there an immediate entitlement action filed in the trial court in Kentucky?
Yes, that was filed around August 17th of 2000.
Was that after they withdrew their consents in the custody case?
Sure. On March 26th of 1998, they wanted to revoke their consents, so that occurred prior to the August
The revocation did. All right. So then they started a new case for entitlement in Kentucky.
Correct.
Before that, the Ohio adoption proceeding had already been progressing, had it not?
Yes.
After the withdrawal of the consents, but before the filing of the entitlement action.
Yes.
Why don't you argue then that that's the period of time when jurisdiction attached? I mean, conceivably there was a period of time in Kentucky, was there not, where there was no case pending when Ohio was acting.
Because they waived the entitlement brief on time. So she can do this in amicus to get around
the Jesus. Just in the sense that it's always been the Ascenti family in the state of Ohio. Yes, they do work with Richard. Yes.
What is the Ascenti family?
Did my red pen get on my face?
The Ascenti's responded by filing in Ohio. Instead of returning the child, they responded by filing in Ohio. So basically,
Can be truthful, but can be quick to
see. That's not correct, but it's like, that's what I can hear.
Thank you, Ms. Pomeroy. Mr. Cullison.
May I please support? My name is Richard Cullison. I represent the appellee, Regina Moore. My co-counsel is Michael Scala. Stephanie Dietz represents Jerry Thorne, the other appellee, and she has graciously ceded me her time.
Can you tell me, this is not arguing the briefs, but I noticed that there was one lawyer representing both sides up until a certain point, and I'm not sure when that point is in time. Can you tell me when that is?
When did, it was well before the April hearing in the Trumbull County Probate Court. It was toward the end of 1998. Mr. Dorney and Ms. Moore took separate counsel.
In November of 98.
I think that's approximately accurate.
That's right.
So the counsel that gave the advice regarding the time that you can withdraw your consent, that was the counsel representing both parties.
Yeah, that was much earlier, Your Honor. That was in the end of 97, moving into 98. Mr. Donnelly advised both Moore and Dorney that regardless of anything they signed, they had until the conclusion of the voluntary termination hearing to finalize their decision as to whether or not Justin was to be adopted. That was the linchpin of the trial in Kentucky as to whether that meant that their purported consent could not be voluntary and informed under Kentucky law. The trial judge found that they did not consent validly under Kentucky law. At a hearing where the assentees participated, stripped of the emotional veneer.
Excuse me, what do you mean by participate? Because they're denying that they had any right to say anything. What do you mean?
Yeah. There were two proceedings, and there was never any period of time where Kentucky was not exercising jurisdiction over Justin from March 16 of 98 until the present. The first proceeding was a voluntary termination proceeding that was supposed to be the culmination of the adoption, except instead of going forward, they indicated their desire not to terminate. That case was not dismissed. It was continued on March 26th. On May 11th, 98, within the context of that voluntary termination, Moore and Dorney filed a custody motion seeking Justin's return, and the assentees counsel was afforded notice and an opportunity to be heard. On May 22nd, they entered a limited appearance challenging the court's jurisdiction over the person in the context of a termination case. It was briefed three times. It was argued. Finally, in August, the assentee's motion to dismiss them was finally granted. Now they're arguing that they were denied an opportunity to participate in a proceeding that they had been trying desperately to escape. After they escaped this proceeding where they had had an opportunity to argue and they had had notice, the court simply dismissed the action, but they didn't dismiss the action in Kentucky until a companion action, the petition for immediate entitlement, had been filed on August 17, 1998. At that time, Justin had not been out of Kentucky in excess of 6 months. Therefore, Kentucky continued to have home state jurisdiction. Similarly, at that time, the Ohio adoption filed June 5, 1998, 3 weeks after the request for Justin's return had been filed. That adoption had already been dismissed. The judge in the Trumbull County Probate Court communicated with the Kentucky court, ceded jurisdiction in Kentucky, and dismissed that case. On August 17th, the only thing pending in Ohio was an appeal of that dismissal. Now, so the assentees had notice and an opportunity to be heard in the first proceeding. They declined to participate, and eventually the court dismissed it, saying that, well, we're going to dismiss the voluntary termination. By that time, the new custody case was pending, where the assentees had clearly entered an appearance and had clearly actually asked for Justin's custody in their prayer for relief.
Was a voluntary termination in the entitlement proceeding, or are those two different proceedings?
Those are two different proceedings, Your Honor. Technically, the voluntary termination proceeding is simply that. It's a proceeding to voluntarily terminate your parental rights. Now, Once the motion...
And that's the original action in Kentucky, okay?
Yes, March 16 of 1998.
Now, the court eventually dismissed that one, didn't they?
September of 98, yes, sir.
Was that after the entitlement proceeding was filed?
Yes, sir.
And then the court, as I recall it, continued the entitlement proceeding. And then a custody proceeding was filed.
Well, in Kentucky, the petition for immediate entitlement and the petition for custody are rolled into one action.
Okay.
There was only two actions, not three.
Okay.
The court did never continue the immediate entitlement action. That was filed in August. Discovery ensued. The Assettes attempted to block the trial by trying to writ of prohibition in the Court of Appeals. That writ of prohibition was denied on February 3rd.
What proceeding did the trial court continue?
March 26th, which was in the voluntary termination case.
Okay.
Moore and Dorning expressed to their attorney that they did not want to terminate. The lawyer communicated that to the court. The court, instead of dismissing it, which would have been an appropriate action in my view, simply continued it.
And if the court at that point had dismissed it, it would have negated the consents and ended the whole thing.
No.
It would have negated any argument that they had voluntarily terminated. I suspect that the Assentes would still argue that the document that was signed might still constitute consent to adopt.
Because they didn't terminate within the 20-day period or whatever it is.
Because they didn't revoke. It wasn't 20
revoke,
days
after
signature. It was 20 days after interstate placement. Because they didn't revoke by March 9th, they would have had an argument, though in our view, not a credible argument, in light of the proof that we proffered at the trial.
Okay, now I understand the procedure, and there were two proceedings, not three. What is presently before the Court of Appeals in Kentucky?
Presently, what is pending, and it was argued August 2nd, is A, did Kentucky have jurisdiction in the immediate entitlement proceeding? B, if so, was the judge correct, the trial judge correct, in ruling that under KRS 199.11.14, Moore and Dorning had never given a valid consent to adopt? That is more or less a mixed law and fact question.
Okay, now the case before the Court of Appeals has as appellants the Assentes.
Yes, sir.
Okay, and that case number is the same as the immediate entitlement proceeds case.
The trial court case number would be the same.
Okay.
Obviously, they read docket. Yes.
So the matter on appeal is in what we'll refer to as the second proceeding. So that still is a live, viable action in the courts in Kentucky.
Not only in the Court of Appeals, but even in the trial court.
Yeah,
because
I understand.
A lot of,
where I'm going, I understand. Where I'm going with the question is, was there ever a period of time from when this started that the Kentucky, that there was not anything pending in the Kentucky jurisdiction?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. From March 16th of 1998 until today, Kentucky has been constantly exercising jurisdiction over this child. And because of that, their orders are entitled to full faith and credit. As long as Kentucky had subject matter jurisdiction, which they did because of home state, and as long as the Assentes were afforded notice and an opportunity to be heard.
And that matter that was pending at all times in the Kentucky court was preceding any adoption proceedings in Ohio in time.
The initiation of the Kentucky proceedings preceded the Kentucky adoption. The March 16th was the...
The Kentucky adoption?
The Ohio adoption. June 5th of 98. It was dismissed July 8th of 98.
Yeah.
There was a notice of appeal August 6th of 98. Of course, in some ways, the issue isn't when was the adoption pending so much as it is, when did Ohio attempt to assert jurisdiction? And they didn't attempt to assert jurisdiction over the controversy until at least December of 1998, which is when the 60B motion was granted reinstating the adoption. The evidentiary hearing on whether or not Ohio was going to assume jurisdiction occurred in April of 1999, 2 months after the trial in the Kentucky action.
But in December of 98 and April of 99, preceding either and both of those dates was the initiation of the entitlement proceeding in Kentucky, which was at all times pending.
At all times, the entitlement proceeding was pending.
And isn't that where you then go to the full faith and credit issue, which is what I'm trying to get at,
yes,
because that's the issue in this case. I mean,
yes,
if we say no full faith and credit, we can give Ohio any jurisdiction. Probably.
Assuming that without conceding that, the answer is absolutely yes. At the crux of this, if you strip away the emotional veneer, is do the Kentucky orders have the right to be enforced in Ohio? The reason they do is because Ohio law, 3109.30, gives them full faith and credit. So does federal law, 28 U.S.C. 1738, says that if there's subject matter jurisdiction and a custody determination, and the contestants have an opportunity to litigate, then notice and an opportunity heard, the orders that ensue are entitled to full faith and credit.
So you're saying that the assentees did have opportunity to be heard in all of those proceedings in Kentucky?
Well, let's look at what they had. And I'll tell you what they had, and you all decide whether they had an opportunity to be heard. But on May 11th, they had noticed that we were seeking Justin's return. On May 22nd, they entered a limited appearance to challenge jurisdiction over their person. Thereafter, they briefed it three times trying to get out of the case.
Were they challenging jurisdiction over their person or Justin's?
Over their person. That they did not raise subject matter jurisdiction in the entitlement proceeding. And of course, in a custody proceeding, it's subject matter jurisdiction over the child rather than personal jurisdiction over the person that's controlling. So that may have been, it was their strategy.
I would like you to complete your answer to my question, please.
Would you mind?
The question was...
Oh, what opportunities did they have? Okay. They were afforded an opportunity to argue, and they prevailed. They got out of the case, and the voluntary termination case was dismissed. Then, after August 17th, when the new action was filed, they answered. They sought custody of Justin in their prayer for relief. They went to the Court of Appeals of Ohio in an attempt to block the proceeding. They were afforded an opportunity there and lost. They did discovery.
More than that.
They participated in a full day of trial.
You're right, lawyer.
In Kentucky on February 4th, 1999, where the issue was whether or not consent had been validly given.
See how he started to think
about it. This idea that somehow something sinister happened in the entitlement action, that thereafter the Kentucky courts foreclosed them for participating in the immediate entitlement action, that simply didn't occur. And if you read Judge Summey's opinion, you will see that she afforded them an opportunity to argue as to whether or not they should have evidence as to whether the consent had been revoked. And then she afforded them an opportunity to participate in the hearing to determine whether or not consent had ever been validly given in the first place. There were no procedural errors in Kentucky, and the judge of the Trumbull County Probate Court didn't find there was anything procedurally deficient, that there wasn't any finding that there was any lack of procedure in Kentucky.
Well, I thought there was one aspect that the Kentucky judge did foreclose the assentees from participating.
That was on August 6th, I believe, of 1998, where she finally ruled in their favor and said, well, you know, you're right. You're not before the, I see my time's expired.
You can finish your...
She said, you're right, this is a confidential proceeding. The only thing really an issue is here is whether these folks are going to voluntarily terminate or not. We're going to let you out. But nothing happened thereafter in the voluntary termination proceeding to their prejudice. That action was dismissed. The August 17th second action is the one wherein the order is issued that we seek to give full payment and credit. There's no question there was subject matter jurisdiction as of August 17th. There's no question they had notice and an opportunity to be heard. They were not only heard on the merits, they were heard on the jurisdictional arguments. The very arguments that they're raising in this court as a jurisdiction were argued October 21st, and the Kansas Circuit Court resolved against them. That issue's on appeal in the Commonwealth of Kentucky even as we speak.
Are the so-called due process arguments, are they on appeal? The Ascentes due, their argument that they lacked, they didn't receive due process, are those on appeal or are those?
Those issues have been raised and are, I would say yes.
Is it fair to say that your position would be that because Kentucky exercised original jurisdiction and maintained continuing jurisdiction throughout this whole procedure, that neither of the Interstate Compact Acts plays a role here?
There is certainly authority for the proposition that the UCCJA jurisdictional provisions override the compacts, and I think that is a well-reasoned position. However, even under the Interstate Compact says jurisdiction remains with the state of the sending agency until the adoption is finalized, the child's discharged. So either way, I believe Kentucky has jurisdiction.
Is it better to say, is it better to state your position that in fact, if the UCCJA applies, you never get by the first provision which says that the court first assuming jurisdiction of the child's location has jurisdiction, and that's the end of it. You don't have to apply the other provisions. Would that fair, though?
Yes.
Okay, because I have one more question.
Jurisdiction ultimately has to call as to whether they apply it or not.
I have one more that I need to know for my decision in the case. You have now, from Kentucky, an order that your clients are entitled to the child. Is that correct?
The February 11, 1999 order says that in substance, yes.
Okay. Has there ever been an order from that court to have the child returned to your clients?
Only in the context of visitation. There was a March 18th hearing on how quickly this order was going to be implemented, what were going to be the parameters, was it going to be with all deliberate speed, etc. The current order sets up a rather elaborate visitation plan, but there has never...
So the trial court in that case never made a definitive order, next Monday at 10 a.m., transfer this child back to your clients?
In terms of what I might call a cold turkey order like that, there's never been that. There was an order saying that they were entitled to do it, but the March 18th order, in effect, partially...
Negated that. Yeah, I understand.
Partially stays it, I would say, or has slowed down the implementation of that order, I would say.
Very quickly.
At the outset, counsel responded that this was a conflict of laws problem where we should do a locus analysis to determine which substantive law should be applied in this case. That might be accurate if we get to a conflict of law situation, but I prefer to characterize this as a jurisdiction case. That first we have to decide where jurisdiction is. Jurisdiction is in Kentucky for all the reasons I've stated. Once we decide which court has jurisdiction, then the proper court would do the analysis as to whether it's a Kentucky or an Ohio law question. obviously the consent or the lack of consent is a Kentucky law question. I don't think that, I don't think the consent is ever presented as a Ohio law question. But the threshold issue is jurisdiction. And the Court of Appeals gave people from Kentucky who were not particularly popular in that community justice by enforcing the Parental Kidnapping Prevention Act and the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction Act. We don't want Ohio to say that if you have an out-of-state of private adoption, someone that's a little bit flawed, bring it on in and we'll see what we can do. That would not be good policy.
You've used your time, Mr. Cole.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Pomeroy, you've used your time. Should we take a minute for rebuttal? If you like it. You don't have to. No? Okay. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal, please adjourn court.